Hey, everybody. Chris and I have our first sponsor. We're so happy now. Our association with the Ruinous Media Network has yielded us a sponsor, and it is DistroKid. And they help people get music up onto streaming platforms easily and cheaply. I use it. I've uploaded a bunch of stuff that I recorded eons ago, and now all that stuff's on streaming media platforms, and I did it through DistroKid, and it was super simple. So if you're a listener of ours and you want to try DistroKid, I highly recommend it. The code for you is TalkGuitars. So it's distrokid.com/VIP/TalkGuitars. So try it out. I hope you dig it. That's our first sponsor, man.
Wow.
We're going to talk today about something he and I have been bumping around for a while. It's called the red light fever situation in the studio. And Chris has been doing a lot of recording lately, so this topic is probably nearer to him than me because it's been a while since I've been in a studio. But even home recording, I think it happens. I know it happens because it's happened to me, but it's kind of an interesting phenomenon that, you know, when you're in the studio and the light's on and you're ready to do your thing, sometimes you start to sweat or freak out and then you can't do it. And so you got to do it again and again and again. And that's probably why studio cats are called and make a ton of money, because they don't have red light fever or get it a lot more seldom than regular peeps like you and me. What's your take on this, Chris?
Yeah, that's a timely thing. It's something that I haven't really thought about much until very recently. I haven't done a shit ton of recording, but I have made some records and been on some records and been in some recording studios, and I've never really noticed. I always heard about the term, but I never really even thought about it. It was something I never really occurred to me that I would ever come up against. But recently, making a record, and we had several sessions. I think we had maybe three or four day sessions over since October until just recently. Uh-huh. And I think it was the last session of the October stuff. I was cutting a guitar track in the control room, and I was using the engineer producer guy's, like, I think it's like a 63 Les Paul Jr. SG style, really That's super sweet. Cool guitar.
Yeah.
Sounded great. It felt great. And there was one single part I had to do for a song. It was like a melody over the chorus. On each chorus, it was just like a little melody along with the vocal thing.
Uh-huh.
And it was the hardest thing in the world. It started, you described it great, because it's a snowball effect. So the more you fuck up, the more you get into that mindset. And it's like, right. you start to think, am I ever going to get this stupid part? And it's an easy part. And then after you've at it for a while, you start to sweat, and then you start thinking, I just want to be done with this. I don't want to be on the spot right here. So it's all this ridiculous anxiety and bullshit, just because, you know, you're playing your part in under the microscope.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was so funny, because the producer guy was like, I've got some really stressed guitar players, because the other guitar player was having trouble too. And it's a psychological, you know, mind fuck of your own. And it's, you know, you find yourself just being really passive and apologizing. Oh, sorry.
Right.
You know, and just like really annoying. The good thing about it was, after I identified it during the second group of sessions, I was able to deal with it and get rid of it. But it was super annoying, because like the producer guy pointed out, recording is supposed to be fun. And it is. And it was fun, but it was just like this thing that I had to deal with for the first time in my life that was kind of annoying. And you mentioned like home recording.
Yeah.
I experience the exact opposite. I can play, but I record myself, and I'm always sitting, you know, what would be considered the control booth, but it's just my desk with my setup.
Yeah.
And I feel really inspired, and you know, usually I'll do like, maybe especially if it's a new song, I'll do like a comp. So I'll take the best bits and make a comp.
Yeah.
But I've actually come up with some really, really cool parts that I really like the way I play it. I like the feel. I like, you know, everything about it. It's almost, I'm more inspired in that situation. But the studio is like, that this time was something going forward I'll probably have to be aware of, because it's super annoying.
So what specifically did, going back to that, when you were having issues in the studio, what was there something specific you did to deal with it, or just being aware of it and identifying it kind of loosened you up to say, I can't continue to do this? Or was it kind of words from the producer or engineer guy that helped you kind of mellow out and get back into the groove, or?
No, I mean, the first time ever in my life, which was in October, I mean, we just joked about it. And I just felt like kind of like an asshole for this part. And, you know, it's like just doing stupid, like you'd get it really close and then you'd, the last note you'd fuck up or something like that. Yeah. And you just, it's just really weird. You just feel like you have boxing gloves on. Yeah. And it's like, you're not in the, you know, so much of when I play stuff that I just get into this mindset, this place where it's like, I just, you know, I don't think about anything except for the song and, you know, and it wasn't there. I don't know where I was, but it wasn't there. So, but when I finally did identify it, I don't really remember what I did, but I didn't experience it. You know, I had to do some more parts and I just, it took me a bit, but I was like, okay, you know, whatever. Some shit takes a while, you know?
You just worked through it, essentially.
I just worked through it, yeah. And I will work through it for the rest of my life. But it's just interesting that I experienced that so late in my career as a professional guitar player.
I think that is
world-renowned guitar
player. Well, it's cool that you said that because for me, I experienced it early in my guitar career, or recording career, actually, because I was in a band in the 80s here called the Puget Sound, and so the first time we ever went into studio, it was killer because we were so rehearsed, right? And we were really excited because we'd never been in a studio before. So that first experience for us was awesome. Basic tracks, boom. Overdubs, boom. Vocals, boom. Everything was just because we were so freaking rehearsed. We knew these songs so well. And then sure enough, I don't even know, it was our second time or third, whatever, but you know, we got complacent and didn't practice the songs as much. And then we're in the studio and we're paying for the time, right? We all had day jobs and it's the clock is ticking, right? And I remember distinctly being in the studio, you know, knowing that I didn't really know these songs as well as I should, and having the headphones on and listening to, like you say, it is, that's another good analogy, is that you're under a microscope and you're hearing yourself in your headphones. You're hearing every little nuance, you know, like the pick scraping on the strings because, you know, the mic is on your amp. And so I remember distinctly, like you were having the same issue. It's like I had to do this part and it's not a difficult part, but for every time I did it, I'd screw it up. I couldn't get through the part. What's worse is I think I did that on some basic tracks, right? Where the band is playing, laying down the basics. And it was just so frustrating, man. And I'm trying to think of what I did. I think I just worked through it too, but I think that the engineer at the time that worked with us was pretty cool too. And I think he had some words, you know, to kind of help us get through that. Cause I wasn't the only one having issues. I mean, I think us as a band, we just weren't as prepared as we were that first time we went in the studio. We got complacent and stupid.
Right.
But I think we went outside maybe too, you know, and just took a break. I think a break, you know, something like that happened. But we, you know, eventually you get it done. But it is weird, man, because again, like it's happened to me at home too. You're right. I mean, being at home, you'd think it's like, okay, this is all my stuff. It's in my living room or wherever it is, you know, but just for some reason, once those headphones go on and I'm expecting myself to do this part flawlessly and I don't, it's like, I'm a guy that's so much in my head all the time anyway, that it can kind of mess with me sometimes. So I've experienced it too, just home recording, you know, like, fuck, I can't get this part right. What the hell is wrong with me?
Right. But you can go like 10,000 times and it won't matter.
Right.
One of the things that just occurred to me too, is at home, a lot of the times I don't have headphones on. Sometimes I do, especially if it's like an acoustic part. That's one thing that for, even when I didn't have like actual red light fever or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I had trouble like getting into the zone or whatever with headphones because the guitar sounds so tiny. And, you know, everybody's isolated a little bit. You know, you try to make it as live as possible, but it's kind of isolated. So you kind of get this disconnect with your guitar. You can't really feel it. I usually always like to be in the room with my amp, even if I have headphones on it, because there's like a feel you get. So, yeah. And what were those headphones that everybody used forever? They were some Sony headphones. They were really popular. I guess they were really cheap and sounded decent. They were horrible for guitar. Guitar sounded so tinny. Whatever phones we used at this last time was much better. I mean, that wasn't as much of an issue. And the other thing I did this time, which I think came from recording at home so much, is I, for the most part, even on some of the basic tracks, I sat down just to make myself more comfortable. You know what I mean? You'd think that you're rocking out, you know, and for some of the songs I tried that. And if it wasn't working, I just sat down because I just wanted to be comfortable. Yeah. And this was even before I experienced, you know, having trouble getting a take. The one thing that was interesting about this session that started way back, these sessions that started way back in October was, I'm going in there, I had some ideas in my head, like I'm going to, you know, I'm going to bring these guitars, and I got an idea, like I'll do like two parts that, you know, I'll do my solo and maybe do like something to kind of complement that, or, you know, maybe use a different guitar for this and that. And when we went in there, we were offered the opportunity to record on tape, and immediately we're like, oh yeah, yeah, let's try that. And that changed everything. It changed the approach to the songs in a much better way. Really? And I kind of had to rearrange the way that I was going to go at things. It became a lot more important to get, you know, a really good feel for the original. I mean, we could fix individual tracks, but you had to get the drums and, you know, and the feel is the main thing. So that kind of switched things up, and that was kind of a psychological thing, but it was for the better. As soon as like we finished, like, you want to come in here? Let's one of the early, you know, basic tracks, and I heard the drums. I'm like, that's why people use tape. It's just nothing sounds like that. It sounded really, really great. So that was cool. But that did kind of throw a little spanner in the works as far as like my initial perception of what was going to be going on. So that did it. One of the things I liked about that was apparent from the first day after we got the first set of basics done, and then we started doing some guitar overdubs, and this is still on tape. We have, you know, we had some more tape to do, and then we dumped it into Pro Tools to do like the rest of the overdubs. But it's like hearing the parts where you have a solo in the song and you play the solo, and then you can hear, like, you hear your guitar drop out, and then here comes the solo, and the where you come in, there's a couple of songs where you can just, where it comes in, there's no way you could do that by punching the guitar in. It's this natural thing that you can't even capture. And I thought that was really cool. And you know, the red light thing too, we ran into this last time, the first set of sessions, I think too, for the same reason you did. We had some songs that we didn't know that well. Yeah. You know what I mean? Some of them up to like the last weekend, we were trying to iron out parts. And there was one part that I did. It was one solo on a song that was a new song that we didn't know very well. Uh-huh. That I worked out like the Sunday morning at the table before I came to do it. I mean, I had parts of it that I had worked out, but the whole thing put together, I did that morning. And when I was doing it, that was another problem that I was having. I think maybe I was having a little bit of like problems getting it. I think I definitely was. Part of it was I just didn't know the part, you know what I mean? And then, of course, when I got home, I played the part perfectly. I'm like, oh, that's what it is. But the recorded part isn't the same. It's a little bit different, but that's kind of cool in a way, too. You know, I played something that just, you know, was kind of spur of the moment. And that's the other thing that I realized about recording this time around is I love, like, you know, happy mistakes in songs and things like that and things that great. But I'm a horrible person to let them happen, because for me, I make a mistake and I can only hear it as a mistake. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'd love to get to a place where I could hear that and be able to tell that that's a fucked up, but you know, that's works there. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think that would be part of like becoming a good guitar player, just to know when to just let it go.
Yeah.
You know, instead of being such a perfectionist, which I can tend to be. So yeah, where I don't know. I kind of got on a tangent there.
No, I love it. That's another good thing to do too, is just sit down. I remember this doing the same thing. Like I was in my mind, it's like, oh, we're a band. We're in this room. We should all have our guitars standing up and stuff. But if it's not happening, try something different. Sit down or whatever you need to do. Or like you say, go into the control room, do something like that. Because I remember back, you made me flash on times when I did some of that stuff, you know, just to switch things up or try to get a different feel or feel more comfortable when I was playing a part. Yeah. And also just remember that it's supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
And no, it's hard to do when you're fucking up and when the clock's running, but you know, it's supposed to be fun, man.
And you may have just spent like, you know, 6 hours sitting in the control room, just making jokes and being stupid. And then it's suddenly later in the day and you're on the spot.
Yeah.
One thing that I learned from doing all this home recording is I always tried to capture a guitar part where it's just like, you know, when you're playing live and you're just digging in, you're getting it. Yeah. And it's really aggressive. The only way that I can get that ever on a recording is just to be in the pocket. Tight. You know what I mean? It's like the tape can't tell that you're really digging in, or that, you know, or maybe it doesn't sound that good when you dig in like that. Right. But putting it right in the pocket and is just, that always sounds like rock. That's a, like AC/DC kind of like in the pocket rock sounds way better than trying to dig in aggressively and get a cooling sound. In my experience, get it in the pocket and it'll rock every time.
I think you're right. Yeah, I totally think you're right. It's interesting to think about, like you're saying, other band members having issues too. Do you guys talk about it in the studio or try to give words of encouragement to somebody that's having a hard time? Or
when we're not busting each other's chops. No, totally. I think I mentioned to the guitar player and the bass player too, we're being really ridiculously like apologizing, like I'll get sorry, and that's not who we are really. So it's all part of that psychological thing. And, you know, sure, sometimes you'll fuck shit up and you just fix it and you move on. And what you touched upon again is like, it's supposed to be fun. You don't get to do it that often.
Yeah.
So enjoy it, savor it, enjoy it, and, you know, relax. And, but for me, I learned a lot about just being aware. Awareness for me will really help, you know.
That's cool. Also, like when you think about it in retrospect too, do you think the fact that you just worked through it, does that give you kind of a little boost too, like saying, okay, you know, fuck, I thought I couldn't do that, or maybe you didn't think you couldn't do it, but, you know, does it give you a little boost to say, fuck, okay, I just worked through that and I blasted through the other side and I was able to just continue getting some stuff done?
I don't know. I haven't listened to those songs since then. we'll have to see. I kind of felt a lot better about the first batch of songs from the other ones. And I know I've listened to the new ones, the latest ones, a million times because I was in, you know, I was there the entire time. So I heard a lot of playbacks and they do sound good. But, you know, when I get to that perfectionist person, like some of the things might bug me a little bit. And I always, on the early stuff, I mean, there might be a couple of things, but I'll always be stuff that I've just said, I wish I would have done that different. But I know greater, way, way, way greater guitar players are the same way. I mean, I hear them say it all the time. I would have played that differently or just, I don't know. So I did work through it, but I mean, the best part for me about working through it is kind of identifying it and knowing how to deal with it and just work on it as something. It's just like, you know, working on your vibrato or something like that. It's just, you know, get out of your own head. Live can be like that too. It's not exactly the same, but if you're always your own worst enemy in your head. It's like the mind games that you can do. No one can freak you out like that. So, you know, you can have a really uncomfortable show or a portion of an uncomfortable show just by getting up there and not playing the music. I mean, when you're in the zone and you're not playing the chords anymore, you're playing the song, that's the place to be and to go to. And that's what I always love, shows like that.
I'm glad you brought that up because it is very tangential to what we're talking about, but live I've experienced the same thing. And kind of recently when we played the Tractor, like it was a great show and we killed it. But there was a moment when I was inside my head and I'm doing this lead and I'm like, oh fuck. And it was really weird. It was kind of almost an out of body experience. Like I was thinking about my responsibility up on stage to the people out there in the audience. It was really weird, dude.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I can't fuck up. I owe them this performance, right? And what's weird is, you know, you think about that when you're not playing, but when I was up on stage in real time thinking that shit, it was really weird, man. I mean, I didn't fuck it up, but it was weird that I was my own policeman in my head going,
you didn't have enough to worry about with just
exactly.
But I used to do that. I don't do this anymore, but I remember so many times when I used to play a show and there'd be like the place would be packed or something. All the people would be into it. I'd see the one person like looking at his watch or yawning and just key into that.
Me too.
It's such bullshit.
But that's what's so interesting, I think, is it is very much personality driven and persona driven, right? Like you and I are very much the same way. We're in our heads. We're introverts. We think about a lot of shit that probably most people don't think about. That's related to what we're doing, even in real time or after the fact. And that's why I guess, you know, a lot of studio musicians are just, I think their persona and their personality just allows them to come into a situation and perform consistently. You know, it's not like they never fuck up, but basically they're hired because producers know that they can come in and do this part, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's more than that, right? I mean, we talked about it before, like it's, you know, maybe getting fresh blood or musicianship or whatever it is. But ultimately when that red light goes on, these people I can count on them to lay down the shit and it'll be good. You know,
that's the whole package. Yeah. And that was a little something that I thought about that time. Like to keep it open that maybe someone will ask me to play on their record or something like that. What happens if this happened? If I was in that situation, I'd feel like a total idiot.
Right.
I don't know. I've done it before. I've played on people's records. I've come in and done stuff and it's been fine. But like I said, this was a new thing for me. So
that's another cool thing that you just touched on is like, have those experiences been pretty much trouble free, like going in and just being like the hired gun to go in and do something? Cause I've done a similar thing too. And it was really cool. And I didn't feel as much pressure for some reason. I don't know why, but it was like my friend Ben years ago, he recorded his own stuff and he wanted me to come and play guitar on this one song. And it's like, sure, man. And I just fucking, and I don't even think I had a solo written. It's just like, here's the song, do it. And everybody dug it and it was cool. And you know what I mean? And
right.
So yeah, did you have a similar experience when you were kind of the hired gun, just coming in and going, or feeling not as much pressure?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I had the songs beforehand. It was just kind of go in there and do, you know, something here.
Yeah.
And it was cool. It was like I was way back when I was playing my Telecaster. So it was more of like a stylistic thing, like a vibey thing, which is, it's always really easier for me. Lately, like the last several years, I've been kind of more of a parts person, coming up with, you know, cool parts and playing around the chords a little bit more. So some of it's more thought out.
Uh-huh.
And I really, really want to get back to being more in, being able to just more rip stuff off and improvise a little bit more. Some songs are just like rippers, just play whatever. But other ones, you know, I like it so much is why I end up doing it, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of the guitar players I like are like that. So I'll end up taking the chords and working out a part. Some of the songs just really, really overanalyzing. This song is doing this, so it's, let me try this. And I'll try a bunch of shit, too.
That's cool.
And that's another thing that made me wonder how would I do if someone said, come in and play on my record? Because sometimes it takes me a long time to get something, because I want to hear these different things and hear what they do.
Yeah.
And I guess the studio cast that you're talking about, they have been in it so much and they're so in charge of their instrument and what they're doing, is they'll know ahead of time what'll work.
Yeah.
You know, and I will to a certain extent, but I'm always got that. But what if you did the other way? You know what I mean? I'm doing this kind of vibe here. What happens if you did that? And sometimes I just have to play around to see. So.
Yeah, and sometimes you got to hear them in comparison and all that other stuff too. But I want to go back to something you said too about, it's related, but not totally related, but I want to talk about it anyway, because it's related to the studio anyway, and recorded music is, you kind of said, you know, you hear mistakes sometimes or hear things in a recording that just bug you. I'm kind of the same way. Like, but back in the Puget Sound days, we recorded this song and John, the other guitar player, recorded a guitar part. And before he started what he was going to do, it wasn't intentional, but he scraped the string with his pick and it sounded really cool. Like in context, we thought it sounded really cool, but he was like, oh God, I fucked it up. But we're like, no, leave it, 'cause it's really cool. So are there a lot of instances where you look back and you hear things that other people don't hear or don't think is a mistake or something, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That bug you, haunt you to this day.
I don't know. I don't know if anything really bugs me. There's a few things maybe that I've done that we've started playing that song and, you know, like a month later or something, I had it more dialed in, that kind of thing. Like, you know, it really came into it a month later. And I think these last songs that we did are probably going to be like that. But no, I mean, there's one song that it doesn't bug me anymore because I don't listen to it that much. There's a bad chord. They kept the full basic track that I did. It was on a Telecaster or something. And I hit a wrong chord, but nobody noticed it. And I wasn't there when it was mixed, but,
oh, man.
So, but I mean, it must not be that bad because it's on a record and nobody said anything. So, no,
I think it was
either an E when it should have been an A or A when it should have been an E. And there's enough notes in there that only I could probably tell that it was definitely the wrong thing. And because only you really know what you're trying to do. You know
exactly.
What I mean? There was one thing that I did during, oh my cat, Stanley. There was one thing I did during this last sessions too that the producer really liked. And we were kind of talking about maybe keeping it, but I just could never get past that. It did sound cool. It sounded kind of like Mark Ribot, like falling down the stairs, you're playing this thing. But in my head, I was going for that note. I hit that note.
Oh, I see.
And I couldn't let that go. You know what I mean? I'm like, well, should I keep this? And then, you know, and it would be one of those things where every time I heard it, like, oh, you dumbass. So, but like I said, I'd love to be that person that goes, hey, that's cool. And like, that sounds good. Because you can't go back and play it like that. You know, let me play the mistake way, because it's just, it's just executed in a way that it'll never be executed again.
Right. Yeah. And I can remember recent recordings that I did that I wish I would have put a rhythm guitar track on. But I was so, in that time period, I was so in the mindset of, no, it's got to be live. It's got to be just the band. But, you know, I did some leads and stuff. And on some of the songs, it sounds fine with just bass, drums, and guitar. But on some, you can really hear that it would help to have a rhythm guitar. And I wish I had done that. I think that's probably why a lot of artists don't listen to their stuff.
Right. And why, would you?
They just keep recording and not listening to their stuff. But
and that's what you're supposed to do, I guess. But going back to what you were saying, my view is, because I've always been a huge fan of DIY and, you know, just go in there and bash it out. Don't put a million mics on the drum and just get a good live sound. And I do still love that. But I think records should be listenable more than anything. Yeah. You know what I mean? Oh, so if you need to do some overdubs, because, you know, live is, you're never going to get live. Exactly. I mean, live is a totally different thing. It's the way the air moves and everything else. So, I mean, you might as well make it listenable. And maybe you do have a song that's just everybody just playing their instruments, and it just, the way that the sound is captured and the way that the performance is, that's what it needs to be, and that's all it needs to be, and that's really cool. But if the song calls for it, I'm always like, yeah, let's do it. I don't know if I was always like that. I mean, I was really into bands like Husker Du. They made Zen Arcade in like 3 days or something on acid, you know, and it's just like, it sounds really rough and stuff, but and I always liked that. But realistically, I mean, if you make music for people to listen to, you want it to be as listenable as it can be. You know what I mean? And I'm not talking about like overproduced or really anally just making it really sterile and clean. Just make it have interesting things going on and interesting sounds. And
Yeah. And that's what I've learned over time. It's just like, don't get stuck in your head on how you think you should record this. Just listen to the tunes and take time too. That's another thing that we would, you know, sometimes we would do like the night, say we recorded like for fucking 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever. And then we'd listen back to the tracks. But a good thing though, I think that the guy we worked with, he would make us come back later, like next week or something to listen to them, to mix them down or, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
So that's another, I think, really important thing is just get some distance between, your basic tracks and your overdubs and stuff, and when you're going to mix it down or listen to them, or just even when you're going to listen to them, rough mixes, you know, give some time to your ears to rest and come back and listen to them with fresh ears. That was always a thing too for me, like in the middle of the recording session, hearing them back on those loudspeakers in the studio in the control room. God, it sounds so kick ass.
Right.
You know, but you know,
on my phone, it doesn't sound that good.
Exactly. Or just coming back the next week, it's like, this sounds a little different, you know? Like, so it's really important to like give it time too. Time is another thing that you need to give recording process so that you don't. Yeah. But one thing that's fun. Go ahead.
One thing that's really cool that I'm looking forward to is all the songs that we recorded are great. You know, some of them have been playing for a while. It's pretty cool. But there's a couple of them that just came into it in the studio. And what I want to do is kind of absorb that. I'm in the taking a break from it stages. It was like we were into it really heavily for a series of days into it. Now I'm like, I'm going to let it rest for a while. So I haven't even listened to them since that last session. But I want to learn. There's a few parts that came on it, maybe that another instrument played. And integrate that into your playing. But the feels and everything just got better. So it made me more excited about them them. I think they're going to get better when we play them live now, too.
That's super cool, because that's the opposite of, you know, the Red Light Fever, is that you can, some of these songs can just come together in the studio, you know?
Right.
And that's I just flashed on something too, is another thing for me that was always so weird is being in the studio and having it kind of mess with my head is kind of, it's just such a different environment than playing at a club, a dark club with, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I never liked playing daylight shows either, where I felt totally exposed. I always love dark clubs with just a little light on you, you know, because there's a vibe, or just a concert. I always dug that whole vibe where it's dark. The lights go down. Boom. It's dark. Right. And then the stage lights go on and you play. And that's a feel. And so I had to get my head into that in the studio too. And I think, you know, we did our, you know, we tried to dim the lights and kind of create a vibe, but you're still in this studio and it's a totally different environment, even than your practice space, right? Like, so that's another thing to get past is like, okay, you're getting in this studio that's kind of a foreign place. It's kind of sterile and weird. And, but yeah, that used to bug me too.
It's fun. And there's a lot of sitting around, so you get tired and stuff like that, but it's really great. It's fun, though. Something that I always look forward to doing. So hopefully I'll have more in my future.
Yeah, I want to do more of it, too, in a studio. Well, as always, if you're out there, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate you, listeners. And we are part of the Ruinous Media Network. We're proud members of that network. Lots of cool other media on that network. We love all the people we work with. And like I said, we got a new sponsor, a first sponsor, DistroKid. And to listen to the promo so you can get your code for 30% off Talk Guitars. And, you know, we're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all that good stuff. And listen to us. And we're on YouTube too now. So like us on YouTube and subscribe to us on YouTube. Any other thoughts, Chris, before we sign off?
Just play guitar.